Welcome, everybody, to another episode of The Naturalist Capitalist. I am your host, Reed Coverdale, and back on the show for the second time, we've got Drew Hancock of the Drew Hancock Show or whatever. How are you doing, Drew?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me on again. I had this stream up in another tab and I didn't mute it. So like the intro was double playing for me and that was kind of weird, but I think we're all good now.
I think we're good. So are you the Drew Hancock Show or do you just like not have a name for it or?
Well, it's not the Drew Hancock Show, but I'm not like Dave Rubin. Like I don't get pissed off if you call it the Drew Hancock Show. It's just lockout days, I guess, is like the at, but it's just Drew Hancock. I think I'm the most famous Drew Hancock at this point, so you can just search me up by name.
Are there other Drew Hancocks that you've run into online or?
Yeah, there's one who's like a filmmaker. I think there's a baseball player, I think, like a high school baseball player. So if you look up Drew Hancock, it's a bunch of like baseball highlights and then a dude rambling about anarcho-capitalism. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm lucky. There is no other Reed Coverdale on the face of this planet that I'm aware of, I don't think. But if the unfortunate thing is if you type Reed Coverdale into YouTube, all my Tower Gang appearances show up first before this channel. So always make sure anyone who's watching, if you want people to find me, YouTube, The Naturalist Capitalist, not Reed Coverdale, because, you know, when you see me on Tower Gang, I'm not, well, I don't know. Maybe that's a good advertisement, but it depends on who comes across it, which episode it is. But yeah, the first time I had you on, I don't know, it was back in March, maybe. It was early spring and I didn't really know you that well. I'd only known you for about a month or so, seen a couple of your videos, but we've gotten to know each other a lot better over the last several months. I've really come to appreciate your sense of humor and your videos that you've put out since then. You seem to still kind of have the same, you know, the same persona that you did 6 months ago or whenever it was you were on here. But is there anything you've fine tuned, anything that you've, it seems like you ship post a lot more than you used to, or what's changed in the last 6 months, do you think, and what's stayed the same?
Well, I think I ship post less. So whenever I first started, I was super serious and all that. And then after a while, I just slowly degraded into being like a shit poster. Mm-hmm. And now I'm kind of in a happy medium where I just post whatever I want. And sometimes it's funny stuff. Sometimes it's me being serious. And then as far as my YouTube channel goes, I do more like vlogs with my new background and stuff like that. But yeah, that's mostly just it. I'm still the same person. Like, I think the only position I've changed my mind on is probably abortion. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just also like whenever I first came out, I was talking about mostly the cathedral and like this mold bug type stuff. And now as I've kind of expressed more of my political views, people find out more about me and they find out, huh, this dude's also for open borders and like all this other weird stuff. But I haven't changed.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's pretty much the same with me. Although I have definitely started shitposting more than I used to. I always did it a little bit, but I kind of just threw the boundaries away and have just gone for it. And some people are mad and some people are saying it's because I joined the Mises Caucus and it did it to me. And I'll point out a tweet from, you know, 10 months ago or something. Like I found a tweet in relation to the January 6th riot where I said, I wish they were executing politicians instead of, you know, just LARPing inside the offices or something, but whatever. Anyway, we got a super chat here. Nick Ashley, Reed, tell Drew I love him. Hey, Drew, Nick Ashley loves you.
Oh, I think I knew that already, but it's always good to get like reaffirmation of it. I love you too, Nick, in a gay way.
$100.
Holy wow. Shit.
I think you might have added a zero on there accidentally, buddy, but thank you.
No, listen, that's your main Vince guy. He's pretty cool too. I recognize him from Twitter.
Yeah.
I don't love him though, but he's cool.
Well, I love you right now. Thank you. Thank you very much, sir. So, yeah, speaking of you not changing at all and people finding out more about you, you're someone that I've been very impressed with because you say what you think all the time and you don't kowtow, obviously, to the big pressures like the mainstream media or social narratives that you're supposed to go along with. But you also don't kowtow to the cliques or the, you know, the friendship circles you might be in, because those are really actually harder to oppose. Like, it's really easy to be against the mainstream media because they're retarded and they're obviously lying all the time. And then LP National is also retarded, and, you know, they have really lame messaging and they say stuff that's stupid. It's really hard to, you know, tell your friends like, no, fuck you, I actually disagree with you on this. But that's something you do all the time. I think that's really impressive. Have you always been that way, like since you were a kid, or was that something that you became more confident in as you got older? Or
yeah, so I think whenever I was a kid, I took that Jordan Peterson like 5 personality test, and I think it said I was in the 3rd percentile on disagreeableness. So I guess that is just part of my personality if you take stuff like that seriously. I used to be a lot worse about that in school. All right, Magoo 82, good one. I used to be really bad about that in school. Like, I would always be the kid to like correct the teacher and stuff like that. After a while in school, I just stopped caring, which I think was better. But yeah, I'm not going to back away from saying what I believe. Like, if I disagree with someone, I'll say it. I think sometimes I get kind of carried away and I'm kind of an asshole, and I kind of was a few days ago. But nonetheless, I'll still voice my disagreements if I disagree with people. And actually, in our sort of spaces, I do disagree with the mainstream a lot. I think it's kind of flipped, whereas if you're a liberal professor, it's kind of easy to go along with the mainstream. With us, it's easy to go against the mainstream. So whenever I do go against the mainstream, even that is controversial. And I get accused of being like, sometimes like, oh, you're just saying stuff to be edgy or cause controversy. Like, it's not. I just say what I believe, and sometimes I get shit for it. Like the other day, I said that George Carlin is overrated, which is something that I completely agree with. I have never laughed at anything that fucking old geezer has ever said. Yeah, that's just what I believe.
Yeah, so I mean, that's something I definitely disagree with, and that's fine. but that's what I like about you. I'm not very interested in people who are just going with the flow, because as you pointed out, like with us, the flow is what are the shit posters saying today? The flow isn't, you know, what did MSNBC put out, because we don't give a fuck. And you know, I think that other people will have respect for you too. Like, people will get angry at you or me or whoever, you know, for saying what we actually believe. But then I'll get the DMs later on from people like, hey, that was really, I was really impressed that you said that, or that you didn't, you know, bow to the social pressure there. Do you get that from people, or do you notice that people respect it in the long run?
On this last thing with the DeSantis vaccine passport stuff, I did. Prior to that, not really. But I mean, I get kind of upset, and I don't get upset, but I get kind of perplexed where someone will completely agree with me on stuff, and then they'll disagree with one take and they'll unfollow you. And it's like, okay, good riddance. Like, I have fucking people unfollow me over the George Carlin thing. Like, okay, so you agree with me on all of our politics, but, you know, stupid stuff like that. So even like, I say what I believe. I think it's a good way to filter out people that you don't really want around to, which is something that I'm a big proponent of. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of people have picked up Twitter friendships in the last couple of years, just because so many people were locked down, or social gatherings were limited last year. So it pushed people into these social media spaces, and they start to consider people who they tweet with 3 or 4 times a day, really good friends, and then they'll disagree on something and that person will unfollow them. And people will be, you know, horrified that their friendship has ended. And I'll just be like, what was your interaction rate anyway? Like, you were liking his tweets 3 or 4 times a day and he unfollowed you. Is that really the end of the world? And if your friendship ends over something that's stupid, they're not someone that you want in your friendship circle anyway. Like, I mean, I that's just my philosophy on that type of thing.
Well, yeah, a friend is someone that you can agree with regardless of politics. I have a really close friend, one of my closest friends since I was a kid, and he like hates the Jews and stuff, and you know it, like, he's still funny as fuck. I'm still friends with him. And I would say, as far as Twitter friends go, I like think of you as probably a friend, and I think of Nick Ashley as a friend. Otherwise, not really anyone. People get way too connected over Twitter, I think. And there are a lot of people who see me as like a friendly figure where they're not.
Yeah.
But sorry to anyone who I just left out, who I probably should have mentioned, but you know.
Yeah, that was a pretty short list. I thought I was going to go on longer than two, but you know, that's cool. I feel more special now. The thing that you said over the last few days that I found really profound was, you know, if you can't stick to your principles when this is a paraphrase, but if you can't stick to your principles when the going gets tough, you need to find new principles, which is a great point. And I remember listening to Peter Schiff last year, and he was talking about how we need to raise interest rates because keeping them artificially low is enabling more and more debt and more borrowing. And it's not going to do anything for anybody in the long run. And he basically said the same thing. Like, if you believe in capitalism, you believe it right now when things are shitty. We don't want to use socialism so we can get to capitalism again. Like, right now is when we need it. But yeah, do you want to just expand on that at all? Like, the idea that...
Well, you look at Ron Paul, whenever he was running in 2008 and 2012, even the people who disagreed with him on stuff, what would they say about him? Oh, well, he's serious about what he believes. He's been consistent. He's been saying this for decades. Mm-hmm. If you buckle at the first sign of like, oh, maybe we should try to violate property rights to get back at the left. If you fold right away, then you're not going to have that. And say, so Gary Johnson, a few years ago, he was saying that bake the cake and all this sort of stuff. And all the libertarians were rightly saying, hey, Gary Johnson, that's like basic libertarian shit. People have the right to discriminate.
Yeah.
And so now if Gary Johnson were to come out against vaccine passports or whatever, people could rightfully call him a hypocrite. 5 years from now, whenever the next discrimination thing comes out, granted that we aren't all in concentration camps or private boxcars or whatever, I'll go out on a limb and say that's not going to happen. These same people who are in favor of this DeSantis thing, people may rightfully point out that, hey, you were a hypocrite on this 5 years ago. And that's a big part of it. And I think just part of why being consistent. And I'm not really, if you're in the political space, which I'm not in terms of like actual politics and the Libertarian Party, then I can kind of understand wanting, shut up, Jim. then I can kind of understand the sort of mindset of maybe you just don't talk about stuff like this, or maybe you do fold, maybe you do take kind of pragmatic solutions in the meantime, granting that this is pragmatic, which I don't exactly agree with. I'm not in the political space. Like, there's no reason not for me to just say, like, I disagree with this and I'm going to be consistent. There's not really anything that I can do personally to affect it. Like, me sending out tweets going the other way saying, hey, I support this DeSantis thing, that's not going to do anything. So it doesn't matter. I might as well be consistent.
Yeah. Well, you might say that you can't make a difference, but you actually did make a difference, on my opinion, several months ago. And with me, it was the social media stuff. And I still never supported getting rid of Section 230 or like nationalizing social media or anything like that. But I would concede to, that crowd that social media companies had basically become an arm of the state. And you pointed out that it doesn't really do any favors to concede that ground. Like, once you tell people this is not a private company anymore, it receives state funding, or it's affected by the state, or it's encouraged in a certain direction by the state or whatever. Once you say that that is no longer private, you're also conceding ground in other areas. So, you know, everybody got a check last year, $1,200 or $1,400 check or whatever. So are you no longer a private entity? Are you a state actor now? And then it just opens the floodgates for the government to regulate whatever they want, because then they're going to use that excuse as well. If this isn't private, if this is government, we're going to do what has to be done. You really changed the way I started thinking about that. I think the example you gave is, you know, if a restaurant brings out a steak and it's well done when you asked it to be medium rare, you don't have to suddenly say that they're a state, a state entity to disagree with how they prepared your steak. You can be like, motherfucker, I ordered a medium rare steak and you brought me out a well done one. And then you can boycott that place. You can tell other people not to go there. You can strongly disapprove of it publicly, and you can initiate change. The need to suddenly say, like, this is part of the government, so now I can criticize it, really isn't, I mean, it isn't a need. It's just something that you're giving ammo to the other side with.
Yep. So this is something that's fucking annoying on both sides. I did a video like a month or two ago called It's a Private Business Bro or something like that, or Mind Your Own Business Bro.
Yeah.
And there's two sides of this. So I make a lot of references about mask mandates. One tweet that got me in trouble with Breonna Coyle and those types a few months ago was I said, walk into a bank, they ask you to take your hat off for security purposes, but not your mask. And, you know, I just think that's like a funny thing, you know, because I think the mask does more than the hat. And I have fucking left libertarians telling me, oh, they're a private company. They can do whatever they want. Like, yeah, I agree with you. They're a private company. They can do what they want. That's still fucking retarded. I'll call it fucking retarded. And I'll try to watch my words more so you don't get demonetized.
No,
I mean, even if you do, that's more incentive for you to go to odyssey.com, O-D-Y-S-E-E.com.
Which, by the way, I'm sure there are going to be Odyssey fans watching this. I am on Odyssey now. Drew set me up a month ago or so. So thank you, Drew. Go check me out there. All my videos automatically upload after I live stream them on YouTube. And Drew's right. Like, everything he's saying actually is way less offensive than other things that have been said on here that will probably get me removed at some point. So I don't know when that's going to be, but there will come a day where YouTube, I'm sure, is going to can me. So go follow me on Odyssey.
And I will just say, so the other half of that point is that, so I can criticize a business for doing something and still think that they have every right to do it. Bet for Drew. Browns went on Sunday and he wears a Browns hat for his next video. Chiefs win and I'll donate $100 to his favorite charity. I'm a libertarian. I hate the poor people and I hate charity. So I don't understand what's in that for me. But on the other side of that is people who think, oh, well, this business is doing something shitty. They shouldn't be allowed to do that. And I disagree with that, too. I think that, yes, businesses should be allowed to do what they want. I sent out a tweet a little while ago saying, at what point does a private business stop being a private actor and it becomes a quasi-state entity or something like that? I wasn't really satisfied with any of the responses. Some of them were better than others. So there was one from this guy who I really like. His name on Twitter is something like Principled Hardcore NCAP. And it was whenever it becomes formally nationalized by the state. And that, I think, obviously makes it a state actor. The point with specifying quasi-state actor is because there is this point where it's not nationalized by the state, but there are still libertarians who say, this is so embedded with the government that they're... Shut up, Jim. This is so embedded with the government that therefore we're fine to take defensive measures through state action or whatever towards it. And what that point is, I don't entirely know. Jeremy Kaufman had a good answer, and he said basically when it's so entangled that there's no reasonable alternatives. So therefore, something like airlines would be a quasi-state actor. I can be the charity. Okay. Something like airlines would be a quasi-state actor. Something like big tech would not be a quasi-state actor because big tech, there's still alternatives. On that big tech point, I will just say, at the time when I made that video, I was more on the side of repealing Section 230. So that was my bias when making the video. I've completely flipped on that. That was stupid. I'm not in favor of repealing Section 230 at all. And especially, I would say I agree with everything I said in that video even more now. Now that I work for a big tech alternative and I can see that, yes, market alternatives are completely possible. I mean, big tech.
Yeah. Do you think repealing Section 230 will bring about the exact opposite of what everybody wants? Because that was always my confusion with that push, because right now social media companies are not held liable for what their users say on their platforms. If you remove Section 230, suddenly they are. So to me, that always seemed like, well, aren't they just going to ramp up, they're going to ramp up censorship. They're going to have to like pre-approve everything you put out because they're going to be scared that they're going to be held liable for it otherwise.
Yeah. So places like Twitter would be even worse, I think. And then, so you'd basically be divided between like super even more regulated Facebook and Twitter than they are now and like 4chan. And like, that's your only two options and you have nowhere else as far as social media goes.
Yeah. yeah. So what is it? Were you working for Odyssey when I had you on the show last time, or is that something that's come about recently?
I don't remember when that was. I started at Odyssey on April 1st. So it would have been right around that time when I started. Yeah.
Yeah. So how has that been going? What have you, what revelations have you come to other than that Section 230 is necessary? What's some crazy stuff you've seen while you've been working there?
I will just say Jeremy Kaufman, smartest person I've ever met. Follow him on Twitter. It really is kind of interesting because you hear people talk about the alt-right and say like, hey, it's not that big of a problem. And I agree the alt-right isn't that big of a problem. I did not realize how many people still believe like this whole white nationalist stuff. Like I thought that faded out. Whenever you work for kind of a fringe website, your first people are going to be kind of the crazy ones, like the flat earthers and stuff like that. And whereas Odyssey, I think we do a pretty good job. If you look at the front page, it's all normal shit, like the same kind of stuff you would see on YouTube. But there still is kind of an underbelly. If you have to look for it, but there is kind of this underbelly of like these weird far right people. And that was kind of a revelation to me. Stefan Molyneux is on there, by the way, just non sequitur. If you want to check him out, Jim Jesus, I know you will want to check him out, but yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of the alt-right, I agree with you that for the most part, it's just a completely false fear that they're going to rise up and take a ton of political power and they're going to run the United States in a few years or something like the Lowberts would want us to think. But there has been this shift in the libertarian movement to embrace the right and not tolerate them, and not like in a tolerant way and not in a welcoming way, but like embrace them, like pick up some of their ideas and bring them in as mainstream. And I think it's because the Democrats are in power right now. I mean, if you saw the Joe Jorgensen campaign and the Libertarian Party throughout Trump's reign, they were the opposite. Like they were trying to pander to the left. I do think that's a problem, and I thought it was a problem with them doing it to the left, too, under Joe Jorgensen. But the reason I think it's a problem is because, you know, I grew up as a, like, pretty hard right-winger, and what I saw was whenever you wield political power against your enemies, it ends up being turned on you eventually. So, you know, with Gary Johnson, it was like the bake the cake thing, like you said. And now this latest like executive order from Ron DeSantis, in my opinion, that was actually a pretty minor thing compared to like the open borders versus closed borders debate. I think that's actually way bigger, or abortion. Like both of those things are way bigger like concepts than just one executive order that a governor passes. But there has been this sentiment that I've seen rising in our circles to like put the left under your boot and snap their neck and crush them. And that kind of disturbs me, but I was wondering if you've seen that too, and if you think that that's worth raising a red flag over.
So on the DeSantis thing in particular, I sent out a tweet saying something like liberty is property rights. If you're violating property rights to stop the left, you're defeating the entire purpose. As far as this idea of this law crushes the left somehow, as far as the idea that this law crushes the left somehow, it's not. It's going after third party private businesses. So say you have a place like New York where boxcar gang rises up. That's right. Say you have a place like New York where there are mandates and that's awful and I'm completely against it. I'm guessing the majority of their people agree with it anyway. Like, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that. And this Florida thing, I'm guessing that the majority of people, they agree with it anyway. So whenever you pass mandates like this, I don't think it's going to happen anywhere except where the people already agree with it. As far as anti-vaccine passport mandates, the other ones certainly probably will. Uh-huh. So I don't think it's going to be something like, hey guys, we need to push for these in Minnesota. Like, I don't think it's going to happen. And then there's the part of it, you're not punishing the left. You're just punishing innocent business owners, which is a libertarian who believes in private property rights. That is something that I am completely opposed against. There's no scenario where I agree with stepping over property rights. Though Bishop had an interesting argument, and this was like the only argument that I found somewhat reasonable that I could understand. Most of the arguments were just awful. But his point was that, well, obviously we believe in property rights for libertarians, but we don't live in a property rights society. We believe in a civil rights society. And whenever you believe in a civil rights society, a law like this, it doesn't step over already established freedoms. It simply makes the enemies of the regime another protected class. And that's something pragmatically I completely understand. I still don't think that this Florida thing is a way to go about it, because like I said, local jurisdictions, it's not going to get passed in places where it's not a problem anyway. I don't think it would have been a problem in Florida. Any business in Florida who was asking for vaccination status probably would have gone out of business. Mm-hmm. I think if it's something nationally, there's a much stronger case for it to be pragmatic. I still don't agree with it. I think this idea that property rights are being trampled, so we need to trample them even further, I'm completely opposed to. I think that property rights being trampled are a reason to get the government out of property rights and bring property rights to be more prevalent. I kind of rambled there, so go ahead, Reed.
Now, I remember a couple months ago you put out some tweet relating to drug legalization because some, I forget where it was, some governor or some mayor or something was trying to overturn legislation, and you posted about it. And then this guy in your mentions said, no, this is a good thing because it will hurt the left more than it hurts the right. And so that was like, what? I mean, that was just one of those like blatant examples where you're doing something that's going to end up throwing, as you said, like third parties in prison, but it'll punish the left. So it's a good thing.
So I did a video just a month or two ago called The Problem with Conservatives. And my entire conclusion of that video was the problem with conservatives is that they have no principles. They just want to go after the left and whatever the left is proposing. And yeah, I'm a libertarian. I actually do have principles. I believe in private property rights. I don't believe in just attacking the left. If your solution to stopping the left, like I sent out a tweet about this, the left wants to create a government that violates property rights. So we need to create a government that violates property rights. If your solution to the, we're going to have private boxcars is to have a government powerful enough to create boxcars, I'm going to be completely against you. I look at something like I'm a big fan of the Opie and Anthony show that used to be on. They were always attacked by the right wing. Like they were attacked by Bill O'Reilly. They were attacked by these people on Fox News because they were edgelord comedians. 20 years ago, the right wing, they were passing the Patriot Act. They were doing all this anti 9/11 stuff. They were doing the Iraq War. The right isn't your friend either. They just suck at what they do. If they had the power, they would also load you into a boxcar. I'm not a fan of the right. I'm not a fan of the left. As of right now, the right is probably better than the left, but that's just because they're not in power.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there. So you left the Libertarian Party since we did our last video, right? You kind of just gave up on it, think it's a waste of time? Or
I don't think it's a waste of time. There are great people who are involved with it. If you're interested in politics, I'm just not interested in politics. It's just not for me. And I think part of that is that if I was involved in the LPMC, I would have to be kind of more careful about the things I say and prioritize. Like right now, if you're someone like you or Clint and you want to focus on lockdowns, or Dave Smith and you want to focus on like lockdowns and this stuff, I totally get it. With me not being in the Mises Caucus, I can just go a day and just rant about Abraham Lincoln and how much of a bitch fuck cuck he was. Like, I can do that.
That's true. I think there are a lot of agorists who say like it doesn't matter who you vote for, it makes no difference, and I don't think that's true anymore, just especially over the last year. Like if you think there's no difference between having Ron DeSantis and Gretchen Whitmer as your governor, like I'm sorry, but there just is. So do you believe in any form of defensive voting or trying to get involved in politics, maybe not personally, but do you think it actually makes a difference, or do you think it's all, all just a wash?
Yeah, I think it certainly does. Like I live in a red part of a red state. It's awesome. Like I won't deny that. Yeah, it's probably preferable to live under a Republican than a Democrat. And I said that about the DeSantis thing. Like, yeah, I would rather live in Florida and under what DeSantis is doing than in New York. I don't think there's a conflict there. I would rather not have to make that choice. But if I am forced into this binary choice, then yeah, I would choose DeSantis every time. Mm-hmm.
What would you look at as a smart strategy for the Libertarian Party? My big thing is what Spike Cohen has been saying, like, stop focusing on the presidency other than just using it as a message spreading tool. And focus on your state legislatures, your town and city councils, your governorships. Like even Congress is a waste of time at this point. What do you think they should do if they want to be relevant at all?
I think it's as far as like the local elections, I don't know anything about that stuff. So I'm not really the person to ask for that. But yeah, if everyone is involved in the LP, I would like for it to be a messaging tool. And that's part of why I support the consistent principles and all of that, because if you're in the LP and say Dave Smith is running for president he's not going to win anyway. So you might as well be principled about it. I think if you are someone like Tho Bishop and you are involved in the Republican Party and you want to say, hey, let's take pragmatic kind of halfway measures, and I think that's legitimate. I still disagree, but I think that's legitimate at least. If you are in the LP and, you know, you're saying that I'm living in Ancapistan in my head and private boxcars and all this stuff, I think this is I think that's stupid, and you should probably leave the LP and go to a party where you can actually win. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about is this is something you don't talk about much, and I really don't talk about it much, but I catch a lot of flack whenever I do, is about religion. And, you know, you don't bother people for their religion at all. But there's this narrative that's coming out that, you know, you can't stand on your own two feet if you don't believe in a God, if you don't have something higher than you telling you what to do, if you don't have some supernatural structure to believe in that gives you purpose and gives you a solid foundation, then you're just a fart in the wind. But what do you think about that?
Yes, I consider myself to be agnostic. Like, I don't believe in anything. I'm not like opposed to religion entirely, like an Ayn Rand type.
Sure.
It is something pushed by kind of these right-wing people, I think, as a excuse to push for statism, which is something that, you know, I'm always against. But typically I found that the average right-wing person, I think they are more willing, or excuse me, the average religious person, I think they are more willing to take a stand against stuff like COVID tyranny. That's just been my personal experience. Like, there was someone I worked with at a bank. She was super religious and super Christian. And yeah, she just refused to wear a mask at work. And she was not going to take the vaccine because she viewed her allegiance to God as opposed to whatever the government was saying. And I think that's completely awesome. There is this aspect, sort of zealotry and deference to authority, I think, is a big problem with being religious. But I mean, I don't have anything against religious people. I'm not a fan of like the Reddit atheist type. My Twitter bio for a little bit was the bane of Reddit atheist existence. Mm-hmm. Reed is doing the Lord's work. That's right. Reed is a prophet.
It's true. This is this is the ongoing joke that even I don't believe in him, I'm doing his work. So
yeah. Well, you're like the atheist who's so reprehensible that you show everyone like what it's like to be an atheist, and then they go to God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just push them in the opposite direction. It's it's like Kamala Harris for, you know, people who are Democrats. She'll push them away from it because she's so terrible. Same idea. But yeah, what do you think? I mean, I don't hate religious people either. My parents are religious, and most of my close friends are. Most of my extended family is. But what do you think about that narrative that if you're not religious, you can't have any principles, you can't be consistent, you're just a pawn, you're just a pawn in this chessboard of aimless, you know, aimless pieces with no game being played, you're just a fart in the wind? What would be your counter to that?
Murray Rothbard, dude, was like, he was an ethnic Jew, but he was an atheist. And yeah, he founded this idea of the non-aggression axiom, and he took it so far, and property rights, and he coined anarcho-capitalism. He took property rights and the non-aggression principles so far as to basically, I don't think he was the founder of anarcho-capitalism, but basically like the founder of modern libertarianism was an atheist. And he took his principles so far as to say that you don't have to feed your own children, which is not something I agree with. But yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of examples, like Ayn Rand, atheist, very principled. And very like sex crazy, like, you know, she banged her protege and stuff like that. But I digress.
Yeah. Yeah. What is your opinion on the post-libertarian movement from what you know of it?
Well, this is a term that I just heard a few days ago. Pete Quinones was talking about it. So I guess he's not a libertarian anymore, or at least he's not an anarchist, he says. I don't know if he still considers himself to be a libertarian, like a post-libertarian is still a libertarian or if it's not. But yeah, it's basically the same thing that happened to Chris Cantwell a few years ago. And I'll just say that. You have these people where they are libertarians for a little bit, and then they decide, hey, I'm a reactionary right-winger now. So it is what it is. I don't take it that seriously. And you know what? If you aren't a libertarian and you don't believe with libertarian principles, fine. Like, that's totally fine. I tweeted out the other day, Malice has different principles than me. He's still my favorite person on Twitter. But yeah, I mean, at least he's not calling himself a libertarian. And Stephen Kinsella was arguing with him and saying the same thing. If he's not a libertarian, fine. I think it's kind of weird to direct a documentary called Monopoly of Violence and acknowledge that, hey, the state is a monopoly on violence, and then advocate its use against peaceful people. I think that's kind of weird and something that I'm completely opposed to. But yeah.
Okay. Let's see. What do you think about the future of the libertarian movement? Because there are these issues that are like driving people apart, like abortion and border patrol. Do you think there's any hope that they can focus on the big picture issue and the big picture issues and kind of understand the philosophy and then try to, you know, figure out why they believe what they believe on each issue? Because it seems to me that's the problem. So many people don't come from this. They don't come at this from the perspective of property rights or non-aggression. They're told what they're supposed to believe on every single issue. And they'll be like, wait, this doesn't make sense to me. I don't get this. What's going on here? And if they came at it from a philosophical standpoint, they'd actually be able to understand it. But do you think there's any hope for the movement to remain united at all? Or do you think it's just destined to keep splintering apart? Because that's what seems to be happening, is every little clique breaks off. Like when the Loser Brigade lost, the Pragmatist Caucus got kicked out. I actually didn't really think that was a good thing, because I was like, well, now watch, the Mises Caucus is going to split up. And sure enough, now we've kind of got like the post-libertarians kind of pulling people away. And then other people are, you know, kind of going conservative again. Other people are kind of like, well, you know, I don't know, this is all kind of dumb. I'm just going to go back to, you know, being a Republican or a Democrat and just not thinking about this. Do you think there's any hope, or is it just destined to do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, personally, I'm not a fan of unity. Like, I don't want to unify with or unite with people who are opposed to me. And I think that's part of why I'm not in the Libertarian Party. I don't want to be forced to have to be nice to people who I frankly don't like and don't want to be nice to. Uh-huh. But yeah, libertarianism, even whenever people agree on principles, it's just something where you can come from the left, you can come from the right, you can come from any economic background or any social background and become a libertarian. So you have people who are just completely different. Like, there are dudes like me and you and Nick Ashley and like to Sauce and people like these who, you know, we're all fans of very offensive comedy. And then you have other libertarians who aren't like that. And, you know, there's just these personality differences that come up, and even that can cause a rift. And then, yeah, there is this whole left wing thing where we define libertarianism completely different than, say, like the Fakertarians or not even the Fakertarians, like a Nick Gillespie type. Like, I define it differently. They define it in like this individual live and let live kind of way. I define it as property rights. So how do you unite everyone? I don't really know. It's not something I'm interested in. I think the Mises Caucus like is the unity caucus, because their whole thing is like, hey, let's put aside the controversial issues like borders and abortion and let's focus on the important stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think that there certainly is like something to be said for that. And I think that's the closest that there's going to be to unity, which is kind of makes it even more fucking annoying than you have like the Fakertarians type going after them and calling them racist and shit. Like, there's wide varieties of opinion. There are more left-leaning people in the Mises Caucus. There are more right-leaning people in the Mises Caucus. But yeah, unity, I think it's possible in the Libertarian Party. As far as the Libertarian movement as a whole, I don't think it's really possible, and I don't think it's really even desirable.
So you've been hanging out with Jeremy a lot. What do you think about moving to New Hampshire? Maybe not you specifically, but what do you think about the idea of, since we can't unite, or, you know, maybe even shouldn't, according to you, what should be done? Like, do you like this idea of consolidation and trying to find freedom in pockets instead of trying to change people's minds?
So I haven't talked about this with Jeremy, really. I've just picked up on stuff and like I've thought about it. Everyone who's saying this bullshit, like, you haven't done anything for liberty, private boxcar, stop living in ANCAP state in your head. They don't live in New Hampshire. They're a fucking retard, because New Hampshire and uniting and taking over a local government, that is the best bet for achieving liberty in our lifetimes. And I completely agree with that. I completely love the Free State Project and I completely endorse everything they're doing. Uh-huh. And they have actually had results. Like, it's not just like this hypothetical thing, like, oh, living in Capistan in your head. No, they've actually done shit. For me personally, I'm perfectly happy where I'm living. I just want to live my best life. Like, I'm personally, that's not my priority. I don't want to move across the country to New Hampshire. Maybe someday I will. At this point, it's just not really where I'm at. If you are the type of person who is obsessed with this idea of like, got to do stuff, got to have results in reality, blah, 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 then I think New Hampshire is the way to go. For me personally, I just want to say what I believe. Maybe people agree with me. Maybe they don't. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, I want everyone who subscribes to me to go subscribe to you. I love your videos. I love what you're doing. I think it's great. You have changed my mind with some of your videos. You know, I'm sure you can change other people's minds. But I have a link in the description to your Twitter page and to your YouTube channel. I should have done your Odyssey channel as well, but I didn't. But I'm sure they can find it through Twitter or whatever.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to add? Any final thoughts? Anything you want to say?
You missed a super chat from Tassos where he said religion is not a substitute for philosophy. And I think that is completely true. Yeah, there's my boy Tassos. I'll just say for anyone watching this, subscribe to Tassos. He is the man. He's one of my biggest like influences and inspirations. So yeah, subscribe to that guy. He's really smart. We will never have freedom as long as property taxes do. I agree with that, but I mean, there are levels to freedom. Like, we're more free than North Korea. Like, I would say we don't really have, like, it's not the libertarian vision, but we're pretty free in America, I would say, even with the lockdowns and shit. Like, me personally, there's nothing that I can't do really except, you know, smoke heroin or not smoke heroin, inject heroin.
Well, yeah. You can't smoke heroin either. I don't know.
I can't smoke heroin.
It's unfair. That's not freedom, man. Like, I want to live in a society where you can smoke heroin, and I want to, and a world where you can do that. I'm not even.
Libertarianism is this idea that the age of consent shouldn't exist and that everyone should be allowed to inject heroin. Like, whenever I think of libertarianism, that is what I think of. And I mean, that's what a lot of right wingers think of when they think of libertarianism too, actually. So I think that's a pretty good definition.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
we're a bunch of godless heathens.
I always appreciate your bold stances and your unwillingness to back down and just say what you think. It's hilarious. And it's so funny watching people who agree with you in the moment completely trash you 5 minutes later because you're still just saying what you think and it no longer aligns with them. I love that. Keep doing it. Never stop. We'll get you back on the show again sometime soon. Everyone go subscribe to this guy. I mean it. It's totally worth it. He's the actual definition of based, not whatever it's come to mean to so many people. Based means saying what you believe is true, even when it's not popular. That's who this guy is. So go check him out. I will be live streaming on Thursday with Dave Smith and Jeremy Todd. I think it's the same time. I think at 10 p.m. Eastern. So make sure you check in for that. And Drew, thanks for coming back on.
Thanks for having me on. I'm going to go get Zaxby's before they close.
All right, man. I'll end the stream right here.